Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Soon it will be mandatory for health service providers to tell patients and regulators when a serious patient safety incident has occurred. The new patient safety bill approved by Cabinet earlier today lists specified serious incidents where open disclosure will be required, such as when a wrong surgical procedure is performed and results in unintended death. Minister for Health Simon Harris, good evening.
Good evening, Mary. Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about how this mandatory open disclosure will work and what is going to be required of hospitals and health providers.
Yeah, so this is really going to bring the Irish Health Service into a new era, for the very first time placing on the statute book, making law, mandatory open disclosure of serious patient safety incidences. And what it will basically mean, Mary, is where there is a patient safety incident, the hospital will have an obligation to disclose that to the patient. They will have an obligation to have an open disclosure meeting with the patient or their representative. They will also then have an obligation within 5 days to pass on that information in writing about the contents of the open disclosure meeting. And I'm also making it mandatory in this law that they will have to inform either HICWA or the Mental Health Commission, whichever is the appropriate regulator, which I think will help give us an overall view of safety standards and indeed lift standards right across the health service. So this is something we've heard a lot from patients looking for this for many years, and rightly so. I've also heard a lot from clinicians looking for this as well, looking to create a safe space, if you like, and a cultural change and a legal framework for mandatory open disclosure. We've seen all too often in the health service when something goes wrong, that people's pain is actually added to and their trauma is added to by non-disclosure. Indeed, we've seen that again with reminders in relation to cervical check again this week.
I want you to maybe define further this question of serious, because among the cases where open disclosure must be made, your announcement says today, would be surgery performed on the wrong patient or wrong site resulting in unintended death, the wrong surgical procedure performed on a patient resulting in unintended death. Short of death, What about other serious incidents which are very serious to patients? Will there be a requirement for mandatory open disclosure?
Absolutely. And I think what people will see in the legislation I'm bringing forward is I'm very, very specifically making powers for the Minister of the day to add incidences to a schedule in the legislation. What we don't want to have to do is change the law, because we know how long that takes every time we need to add something. So the Minister of the day will be able to add what is a notifiable patient safety incident to the schedule of the bill. So by regulation, the Minister of the day can always keep this under review and can add issues. But absolutely, it's about a lot more than just death. It's about any adverse patient outcome. Obviously, we're trying to differentiate between minor things that can happen in hospitals that don't impact on patient safety and obviously patient safety incidences.
But Gabriel Scally made a number of recommendations which, yes, you committed to taking on board. He talked about open disclosure in his review, and he said the option of a decision not to disclose an error or mishap to a patient must only be available in a very limited number of well-defined and explicit circumstances, such as incapacity. So will open disclosure apply to the less serious incidents that clearly Gabriel Scally is talking about there?
Yes, absolutely. And to be honest, Dr. Scally's work and Dr. Scally's report has very much been a driving force in my own thought process in forming this legislation. I mean, Gabriel made the point that for many patients, when something goes wrong, and of course things do go wrong in every health service, that is sadly the nature of medicine, but when something goes wrong, patients want to meet somebody who was responsible for that. They want to hear that person say sorry and mean it. They want to know that lessons were learnt, and they want to know that those mistakes will not be repeated again. So absolutely, and I think when people see this legislation, as we get into debating it in the Dáil, and indeed I hope to begin that debate in the Dáil next week so we can try and pass this legislation quickly, I think we will see exactly we're trying to achieve what Dr. Scally set out to achieve.
Well, let's go back to the origins of the cervical check scandal.
Yes.
Scores of women with cervical cancer not told their smear test results showed them to be in the clear, when in fact this was inaccurate, and the revised test results kept from them for years. Could this happen under the new legislation?
Absolutely not. And I've been very, very, very clear that the sort of debacle that we saw in relation to the cervical check audit will absolutely be covered by this legislation.
Can we move on to talk maybe about the report this week from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists? As you know, the 221 Plus Group and Lorraine Walsh, They don't have confidence in this report.
I've heard the comments from Lorraine and indeed from some others during this week. I'm also, though, aware of many women who did participate in this audit who do have great confidence in it. I suppose I would like to remind your listeners what this was. This was an opportunity for any woman who had cervical cancer in Ireland over the last 10 years to have a free, independent, external review of their clinical history, their screening history, by world-class experts from the UK. And it was also, very importantly for me, an opportunity to ensure that I could adequately answer the question that women were asking: can we have confidence in our screening program and is it working effectively? And I think the report is very, very clear in that regard, that of course, and I'm very conscious that this has been a very difficult week for women who've had cervical cancer, for women who've partook in the audit, for their families. But that fundamental question, is our program working effectively? Yes, it is the answer. But of course, we're seeing the human pain of the limitations of screening and the devastating impacts that can have.
But as you know as well, Minister, women have confidence in women like Lorraine Walsh, women like Vicky Phelan. Lorraine Walsh's words on primetime the other night after she resigned as a patient advocate, she said, "I wish I could tell the women of Ireland I have confidence in this report, but I absolutely don't."
Yeah, and I heard Lorraine say that, and I have absolutely...
She was critical of you as well, Minister.
Well, Lorraine resigned on the 31st of October and she sent me a very kind and generous resignation letter. We've worked very closely together on a number of issues and she has made a massive contribution in relation to improving our screening history. She's a woman I have the utmost of respect for. On this issue, though, I'm very confident that the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists are about as expert as you can get in terms of bringing in clinicians to look at our screening service to give us a very clear external view. I met the Royal College and I asked them, are you satisfied with your independence? Are you satisfied that you've had all the support you need from the health service? They said to me, they've never been surer of anything. So I think what is important, though, and in fairness, I know you had ORCOG on your programme.
I think, Minister, in relation to ORCOG, mislabelling, wrong information being sent to the key women there, Lorraine Walsh and Vicky Phelan. Is that good enough from her? If you can't trust the labels they were putting, that basic detail, can the women trust the report?
I think the women can trust the report. And the reason the women can trust the report is because, remember, this is not a report carried out by anybody other than world-class experts in women's health and screening. And remember, there were over 1,000 women who partook in this report. And it is important to say that many, many of them have gotten comfort and answers in relation to this report. And I also think there's many women, I certainly hope there's many women listening in, who will have confidence and comfort from the fact of the findings of ORCOG in relation to the effectiveness of our
programme. And just finally on this report, is it true, as I've seen reported today, that the Taoiseach is considering a further independent review for women involved in the cervical check scandal?
So the Taoiseach was asked this in the Dáil yesterday and he did say he would give it serious consideration, as we always do the ideas that come from the 221 Plus group. He did also point out, though, that we have obviously just had an independent process through ORCOG. It was done from experts in a different country. They had, you know, really, really significant people working on this in terms of their qualifications. We obviously have a cervical check tribunal, which will begin in the new year, and we'll be able to hear women's cases as an alternative to court. And that tribunal will have the ability to also appoint independent experts. So we're absolutely giving serious consideration to any suggestions raised by the 221 Plus group, who are playing a very important role.
All right, another potential problem here, colposcopy. We heard this morning on Morning Ireland, all of the 15 doctors overseeing the colposcopy service, they're considering resigning. They are overburdened, they are understaffed, and they have felt the brunt of women's anger over the cervical check scandal.
And I think they've also, because I heard Dr. Russell on Morning Ireland today, I think they've also talked about the media commentary, and I think they've also talked about the political commentary in relation to this situation. We do have to remind ourselves, and I say this...
50 Minister, in fairness, their burden in Kerry has increased by 57% this year over year.
I'm just saying I don't wish to quote selectively from their criticisms.
But as a direct result as well, Minister, from perhaps promises that you and the Taoiseach made that any woman who wanted a repeat smear could have one.
Yes, and I stand by that, and I've over 100,000 reasons to stand by that, because over 100,000 women went to see their GPs to seek reassurance. About 50,000 of them decided in consultation with their GP that this was necessary, and we've now worked to clear the backlog. We've significantly increased the resources to cervical check.
But not to colposcopy and yes, the waiting lists, which were 8 weeks. They never had waiting lists, and now look at them.
We're putting an extra €2 million into colposcopy. I visited our staff in cervical check a number of weeks ago. These are people who are doing heroic work in a very difficult environment over the last year. They're making very significant progress. They're saving lives every day. And I stand fully behind them and supporting them and thanking them for the work
that
they do.
Will they get an extra colposcopist?
They'll absolutely get all of the resources that they require. There's already a group in the HSE working on these matters, and I have allocated additional resources to colposcopy services.
Finally for you, Minister, the National Maternity Hospital. When do you expect to hear from the Vatican now for this formal sign-off on the National Maternity Hospital? Last week we heard that a letter has been sent to the Vatican for that final sign-off that is necessary.
So I suppose, contrary to popular opinion, I have no direct involvement with the Vatican in relation to this. My understanding is that the religious order who are involved in the running of St. Vincent's wish to leave St. Vincent's and all of their involvement there. They've applied to the Vatican for that to happen. They have said very publicly that they expect a positive response, and they expect it shortly. I just want to take this opportunity to reiterate that this hospital will only proceed when we have absolute certainty in relation to its public ownership, in relation to its governance, and I've no doubt that will come, and it will come soon. We have started enabling works in terms of a pharmacy and a car park, so there's no delay in relation to this matter while the Vatican considers this issue. But let me be very, very clear, this is 21st century Ireland. My position when it comes to women's health and women's choice is very, very clear, and we're going to make sure that this is gotten right.
It might be 21st century Ireland, but you're dealing with the Vatican. We spoke to Father Kevin O'Reilly, very much against the transfer of the land. He's based in Rome. He is lobbying against it. And he said it could take a long time.
Well, I mean, that's not the expectation of the religious order here. I quite frankly think when it comes to women's health, I'll obviously take views from clinicians rather than priests. And I think that I say that in a respectful manner. I believe that the religious order, who, by the way, have done a lot of good in this country, I believe that religious order are endeavouring to leave St. Vincent's.
Yeah, and my position is crystal clear on this. Be more specific on time, because
the timing is not within my control.
Yes, but you said you expected it soon.
Sorry, the religious orders have said in public statements they expect it shortly. I would hope that we would get it early in 2020, if not before. Then I would hope that the hospital could go to tender in 2020 and commence construction towards the end of 2020. That's the timeline I'd like to see. But obviously not all of those elements are within my control.
Minister for Health Simon Harris, thank you for your time this evening.